For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone. So for our Sangha talk this evening, I'm very happy to have David Hill, who is a board member, Ancient Dragon, and our treasurer, and who worked very long and hard to locate what turned out to be this space. He was one of the people who was most instrumental in that. David has also long been a marathon runner and parlayed that into being the Chicago Dog Runner. But he recently, and I think he's going to talk a little bit about this tonight, did this, to me, mind-boggling thing of doing an ultra marathon for 100 miles in Arizona, and half the people who started finished, and he was in the top half of those who finished, so it's kind of amazing. It's, to me, like doing a one-month sesshin or maybe one of those Tibetan three-year retreats anyway. Glad to have David here to talk to us tonight. Thank you, David.
Thank you. It's nice to see everybody. So for tonight, I basically just want to talk about, from a personal basis, just Buddhist practice, Zazen practice, and you know, for me, and how that relates to the sport of running, or you might say the art of running. And also the paramitas, which were a teaching or something that I sort of felt or sort of resonated with me in preparing for this race and in doing the race itself. So I haven't really rehearsed this too much. I kind of just wanted to talk. So forgive my lack of polish. So 2 weeks ago, it was the weekend of Halloween, I did this race. It's called the Javelina 100. It's a 100-mile trail race outside of Scottsdale, Arizona. And to put it in perspective a little bit, I had done two 50-mile races before, but those were done in Wisconsin, in the Kettle Moraine Forest. One in October, late October, and one at the beginning of May, on like 40-degree days, cloudy, a little bit of rain. So this was a little bit different. This was in the desert. I'd actually never been to Arizona before, but when people started talking about this race, it seemed like a good idea. I thought it was going to be desert-esque. You know, I didn't know it was going to be in the desert itself, which it was. So it was very sunny. There was not a cloud in the sky. It got up to 84 degrees, and there was no shade on the course, unless you wanted to try to crawl under a cactus or something. There really wasn't a place to hide from the sun, so that made it challenging. But I was able to finish it. I was able to finish the race. It took me 26 hours and 39 minutes. And that actually was 68th place out of 250 people that started. I was kind of shocked when I heard that. And 125 people dropped out. So it was no easy task, even for 100-mile ultras. I mean, even in mountain ultras, you know, through Colorado or Northern California, the finishing rate is usually 75% or so. So this race was deceptively tough, I think. Again, it was the desert conditions. So just sort of an overview about the race. It was in McDowell Mountain Park. It was on a loop. It was a 15.4-mile loop. And it was done washing machine style, what they call it. So you run a loop, and then you turn around and you run the opposite direction. And then you turn around and run the opposite direction. And again. So six loops and a partial loop. So that was kind of cool because there's definitely that feeling of interconnectedness, interdependence with the other runners. You would see the leaders whiz by, and that was inspiring. And then you got to see the people behind you, and you're like, well, I feel bad, but you know, maybe not quite as bad as that guy. there was two aid stations out there. There was aid station basically every 5 miles. So there's two aid stations, 5.5 miles or so apart, and then it was another 5 miles back to the start finish, back to the camp, as they called it. And you know, on the first loop, there were some very rocky sections, some hilly rocky sections, and then on that first loop, which would be the first, the third, and the fifth loop, there was a nice 5 mile stretch. It was pretty smooth, and it was pretty much downhill, which was quite nice. But then it was, as soon as you did that, then you had to turn around and go uphill for 5 miles, which got tough. So, you know, the race started at 6 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's pretty, you know, pretty fired up, and started in the dark. So that the first loop, you know, 15 miles, and after all the training, that felt pretty good. I tried to, you know, in a race like this, it's all about pace, and pacing yourself, and you know, not starting too fast, and trying to stay within yourself. So I did the first loop in about 2 hours and 48 minutes, 49 minutes, something like that, which is relatively easy pace for 15 miles. And then the second loop coming back, I did that in just about 3 hours. So that was about a mile 31. But by that point, you know, my legs were starting to tighten up, and it was around noon, it was starting to get hot, and so all the fun and games were pretty much over at that point. And as it turned out, there was only 20 more hours to go. So it was a little daunting. And I'll talk more about this as it related, you know, as it resonated with me with Zen practice and meditation practice. But the third loop coming back, now you're talking 1 o'clock or so in the afternoon, the sun is getting more intense. I made it back to the first aid station, and I saw a guy who, like, wasn't wearing a shirt. He looked like Tarzan. And I heard him say that he had drank 50 ounces of water between the camp and to that first aid station. And I had drank less than 20, maybe 18. So I sort of thought to myself that might be a problem. And it kind of turned out to be one. But I had decided that maybe it would be a good idea not to carry a handheld bottle, which most people did. I had a belt with two 12-ounce bottles, and it was only 5 miles between the aid stations, which didn't seem like it would be that big of a deal. So I figured it'd be easier just to run hands-free and not have to carry water. That turned out to be not such a good idea. So in that third loop, I got stuck. I actually ran out of water in between the two aid stations. And I didn't really know what to do. This was around mile 37, 38. And I was parched and I was thirsty and I didn't have any water. And I was like, well, I could walk, but then I'll be baking in the sun longer. So I just decided to run, and I ran pretty hard for like 21 minutes to finally get to that next aid station where I could drink water. But then I was pretty much, you know, at a deficit in terms of hydration. Kicked in a little bit later. So we finished the third loop at 45 miles, and then the next loop, 46. Now it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the sun was really pretty intense. And in a race like this, you get a pacer. You can have somebody run with you. And in this race, it was starting at mile 62. So a very good friend of mine, I was very generous. He came out from Florida, actually on his wife's birthday, and I don't know how he pulled that off, but was waiting for me to get to mile 62. And here it is, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm at mile like 48, and I'm really starting to struggle. And I'm like, you know, this is not be good. you know, I have this guy fly while he crossed the country, and, you know, what if I keel over now? You know, he won't even be able to run. So that was a little intense, but I was able to persevere. I was able to get through that. But actually in the fourth loop, then the sun went down, and needless to say, I've never been so happy in my life, for the sun to set and to go down. So it would cool off. But then I didn't realize it was going to take so long, so I didn't have a headlamp. I didn't have one with me. I had it back at the start-finish area. So then I was running in the dark on rocky trails. But there was a full moon. It was on Halloween weekend. It was a very big full moon. So that actually was kind of nice. So if you really paid attention, there was enough light to see the big rocks, and you just kind of picked up your feet enough to not stumble on the small rocks. But definitely made me think of my friend Hoketsu, the jeweled moon. Felt the reminded me of her and her positive energy for sure. So then I got my pacer mile 62, and then we one more loop to 77, back to 92, and then that was at like 5:30 in the morning, and then actually I got blistered feet. Obviously there was actually sand, a lot of sandy wash areas, and so it's almost impossible to keep that dust out of your shoes and socks, so it just becomes like sandpaper. And I normally don't have a problem with blisters, but you know, I said in between my toes were blistered and the bottom of my feet were blistered, so just, you know, another challenge thrown in there. And before starting the last final loop, I tried to go and get my feet doctored and get them taped up, and it actually made it worse, not better. So we started the final loop just before 6 in the morning, almost 24 hours in, and was able to finish by about 8:30 on the second day. So that's just kind of a summary of the race. And, you know, so people have asked me, you know, people know that I'm part of this group and have a meditation practice and have been sitting for a little while, have asked me, you know, how did that help you, or did that play a part in your being able to do this? And I really have to say that it did. I think without that, I don't think I ever would have even signed up. Because obviously it wasn't just the months of training before this race, but I've been running for 14 years and done other marathons and other ultras. So it was all sort of a culmination of that. So for me, I think most of you know, but my name is Katsuryu, which means lively dragon, that Taigen gave to me. I think lively is maybe a nice way to say, like, you know, a little off balance. I think if there was a Chinese character for squirrely, I think maybe he would have given it to me.
Different animal.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm 40 now, but when I was younger, I was definitely, I think I was quite lively. You know, in my social scene, in my friends, I mean, especially when in my 20s and in the first part of my 30s, I mean, everybody just went to the bars on the weekend. And that's just what everybody did, and that's where all the socializing took place. So for me, I started sitting around 27 or so, 28. So to be able to have something that, you know, sort of gave me a grounded foundation and able to sort of disengage from that a little bit, it was sort of what felt like vines of attachment and desire into, you know, what was happening at the bar, what was going on at a party, or whatever. For me, it gave me a foundation to sort of back away from that and to sort of stay home on the weekends and then allow the training to take place. So no sitting, no stability, no training, you know, no marathons, and obviously this wouldn't happen either. So again, I just think that the having the daily practice that we do here, and on Monday nights or in longer sittings, just the settling process, the being present. You know, Dogen talks about being in delusion throughout delusion. Which means kind of, for me, that kind of feels like this, you know, trying to stay on top of that and try to have that awareness of different thoughts and feelings instead of, and seeing them as, you know, as what they are instead of sort of being dragged around or being entangled in them so much. So the practice as a whole, I think, has just really been beneficial for me, and it sort of gave me, again, sort of gave me the foundation and the groundwork to get into the sport of running. This, in terms of the teaching about the paramitas, the six paramitas, so first I'd like to just kind of review them and go over them. I think most of us are familiar, but so traditionally there's six paramitas. The first one is dana paramita, or generosity. The second is sila paramita, or precepts, or mindfulness training. Kshanti paramita, which is forbearance, or capacity to bear and transform pain inflicted on you by others, or I would say environment. And these definitions I have pulled from a Thich Nhat Hanh book, so you may have heard them a little different. The virya paramita, diligence or energy, dhyana paramita of meditation, and then what we chant tonight, the prajna paramita of wisdom and understanding. So just to provide a little context for the paramitas, I just want to read something from this book. This is by Red Pine, a book he did on the Heart Sutra that I thought was relevant, sort of just to provide context for him. He says, taken together, the paramitas are also likened to a boat that takes us across the sea of suffering. The paramita of generosity, according to this analogy, is the wood. Light enough to float, but not so light that it floats away. Thus, bodhisattvas practice giving and renunciation, but not so much that they have nothing left with which to work. The paramita of morality is the keel, deep enough to hold the boat upright, but not so deep that it drags the shoals or holds it back. Thus, bodhisattvas observe precepts, but not so many that they have no freedom of choice. The paramita of forbearance is the hull, wide enough to hold a deck, but not so wide that it can't cut through the waves. Thus, bodhisattvas don't confront what opposes them, but finds the place of least resistance. The paramita of vigor is the mast, high enough to hold a sail, but not so high that it tips the boat over. Thus, bodhisattvas work hard, but not so hard that they don't stop for tea. The paramita of meditation is the sail, flat enough to catch the wind of karma, but not so flat that it holds no breeze or rips apart in a gale. Thus, bodhisattvas still the mind, but not so much that it withers and dies. And the paramita of wisdom is the helm, ingenious enough to give the boat direction, but not so ingenious that it leads it in circles. Thus, bodhisattvas who practice the paramitas embark on the greatest of all voyages to the far shore of liberation. So the meditation paramita, which I've sort of already talked about, you know, not only informed and sort of allowed the training that was essential to doing this race, but it also was quite invaluable in actually doing the race. They say there's a saying in ultras that you in a 100 mile ultra you run the first half with your legs and the second half with your mind, so kind of helpful to have a an upright, grounded mind, or a steady mind. So similar to longer sittings or sesshins, sort of that practice of letting thoughts come and letting thoughts go, that practice of, you know, to think not thinking, it's turned out to be very helpful in the later stages of a race like this, where, you know, your mind is coming up with every excuse imaginable to quit. I'll talk about this in a minute, but I also did this as a fundraiser for an animal shelter to raise money for them. And I had like 70 donors, I think, that were pledging. Some of them are in this room. So thank you very much for that. But so I thought, oh, well, that'll be plenty of motivation, you know, knowing that, you know, 70 people are, you know, going to be pledging to this thing. But, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning when you've been running for 20 hours, I was sort of, you know, the hell with them. they're at home in bed. so that didn't work so well. But so it's just kind of amazing, you know, the stuff that your mind will come up with. So to be able to, you know, in doing a 7-day sesshin before, or several years ago I did a 3-week practice period at Green Gulch, to sort of have that history, or to have experienced longer sittings like that and also longer training runs, I think was very helpful in being able to keep that stuff in check and not start to freak out, which there were some people, I think, that really started to freak out in the race. I put down a quote from Dogen here about that he says in the Genjo Koan about if a not only an aversion we'd spread, but if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, the bird or the fish will not find its way or its place. So that was sort of palpable for me, like, you know, if in the first 20 miles you're really trying to find your way at the end, you're really trying to think about how much farther you have to go or how many hours this is going to take, etc., then you can kind of, that can be detrimental to performance for sure. So in regards to the other, some of these other paramitas, specifically Kshanti and Virya, you know, those are obviously part of Zen practice. I think those are things that are cultivated in sitting practice. You know, maybe afterwards, some people who have done practice periods at Tassajara might comment, but I think those things are definitely a part of it. And, you know, to be able to tolerate some discomfort, similar as in sitting, when you're able to tolerate, you know, pain in your knee or soreness in your back, or when is that bell going to ring, or, you know, how many more, I don't know if I can sit 4 more periods today, etc. Similar in running to be able to withstand, you know, hours and hours of discomfort. When I sort of got dehydrated, I got heat-induced nausea that lasted for 7 hours. So from 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 7 o'clock at night, or 4 to 11 p.m., I was pretty nauseated the entire time. And like, I was able to drink water, but no, there was nothing tasted good. I didn't want to eat anything. So I couldn't throw up, and I couldn't eat any food. So that was, you know, I tried every trick in the book to try. I thought I would feel better if I was able to be sick. But that didn't, I couldn't find the magic trick to that. And so it was just, you know, hour after hour of that was a little draining. Plus the blisters and rocky terrain, etc. So I think without having a history of, you know, at least some sort of sitting practice or doing sesshins before, I think it would have been much tougher. There was, you know, obviously then 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, you've been up for over 24 hours, you know, sleep deprivation starts to kick in, and a little bit of hallucinating. Like, there was a few times where I swear I really thought I saw the aid station, like just right over there, and it was, you know, a bush or a cactus or something. So obviously, I mean, this is can translate just as easily to, you know, difficult work situations or relationships or, you know, other aspects of our lives. I'm just sort of giving it from my running perspective. So, you know, these the Kashanti and the Virya and the diligence energy aspect of it were you know, very evident, and this, to me, it's sort of taken together, sort of define endurance. And you know, one thing I wanted to say was, well, I'll say that in just a minute. And then the other paramita that I think was very relevant here was the Dana paramita. Sort of the sense of generosity surrounding this event was pretty amazing and inspiring. Not only did I do this as a fundraiser, that we ended up raising about $6,000. So everybody's generosity in that regard really felt nice. A childhood friend who gave his time and, you know, flew, you know, across the country to come help me was pretty amazing. In the volunteers at the aid stations could not have been kinder or nicer people. I mean, they would just do anything for you when you would come in there, whether it was fill your water bottles or get you any food that you wanted, or, you know, it couldn't have been more helpful. And again, this took place in the desert, so I don't know, like, how all this stuff got there. Like, there was a huge smorgasbord of food at these aid stations. And there was always water. I mean, there was just always water in the middle of the desert for 250 people. Like, I didn't see any trucks. Like, I don't know how all that got there. I don't know if they melted ice. I don't know how they did that. But it was extremely well organized. So it feels it feels sort of weird even to say, you know, I ran 100 miles or I did 100 miles, because it was so palpable, the mutual, you know, the dependence. Because I think if I was out there in the desert by myself, you know, I wouldn't have come back. So this overall, in general, there was just definitely that feeling of interdependence. There's a ultra running group here in Chicago, and there was four of us from that group that came out to this race, and there was one person there who hasn't actually even been running that long, and probably the least experienced person and certainly not the fastest person. And he was out there, and this guy didn't even have a pacer. Like, he had nobody to sort of be with him all night. And I saw him like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would have bet $1,000 that he was not going to finish. And this guy, I mean, he stayed out there by himself, and he stuck it out, and he was able to finish. And I mean, I was thinking about quitting with a pacer and being farther ahead and everything, but then I would see him and him struggling and him staying out there. And, you know, that just directly, you know, lifted me up and sort of kept me going. So he probably doesn't realize it, but he was definitely inspiring other people. So that's really... that's really about it. I just wanted to sort of talk about how, because I've been asked several times, I just sort of wanted to talk about the relevance of sitting practice and long distance running, and sort of how some of the Buddhist teachings sort of resonate in that. So that's about it.
Thank you very much, David, for sharing your experience. Does
sure.
anyone have questions or comments or responses?
Would you ever do it again?
I'm not going to say never. I probably will. But I sort of realized in doing this race and in the training process that I sort of, in terms of running, I sort of like to run fast. I sort of like that feeling of running fast. And 100 milers, it's a long, slow grind. I mean, maybe for a couple of elite guys at the front. The guy that won this race did it in 14 hours. 14 hours and 20 minutes, which is unbelievable. I mean, he shattered a record by the course record by an hour and a half that was held by a famous guy. And we had never heard of this guy before. And the second place guy in this race was 3 hours behind him. So, I mean, I saw this guy whizzing by. It was like, he's on a different planet. He's on a different playing field. And having the perspective of enduring 100 miles, I look forward to going back and doing 50. I think that'll be nice. But what about you? What about doing the practice period enduring that?
I don't know about the practice period of Tazahara, but I was thinking we were talking about seeing the aid station. Hallucinating the aid station. I have very clear memories of the first time, I think in the first couple times I did years ago, these 30-day periods that were connected with Vajradhatu. And at a certain point in those, you know, I'd be sitting there in the morning, we'd get up early in the morning, and I'd be sitting there and boom, like full blown in front of me would be my bowls filled with oatmeal and, you know, tea, you know, just complete hallucination. So that
didn't
resonate, but I think you really earned yours. I think I was just fooling around
in
meditation.
I don't know how maybe some of you felt after a sesshin, but I definitely, it's been 2 weeks and I still kind of feel it, but there's definitely a sense of calm that wasn't there before for me. And I think just enduring 20-something hours of, at times, pretty intense discomfort, you know, coming back and, you know, catching a red light or a little traffic jam, it's like, all right, you know, this probably isn't going to last more than a couple hours. I can probably, it's probably going to be all right. Probably can handle this, and I'm just sitting in my car, so not much of a problem.
You know, I'm sure that we're supposed to be asking questions about Zen, but I'm like totally fascinated by this race. So how many days or weeks was it before you, well, I can't even weeks yet, but do you feel normal now? I mean, do you feel like recovered?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty
normal.
Much. Yeah, pretty much. I don't know what normal, but yeah, I feel pretty good. Well, you know, I kind of have to run for my job.
Yeah.
So I took a good 2.5 days off. So I finished the race Sunday morning. I was running the dogs again on Wednesday, which, you know, pretty gingerly, pretty easy runs, but I was running again on Wednesday, and then I think in some ways that was helpful to sort of just get the blood flowing and get the lactic acid out of the muscles. But by Friday, I was feeling decent, feeling okay.
So reminds me when you were talking about childbirth and people, and especially like afterwards, when all said and done, baby's out, you know, and not even maybe like right there, like the next day, like doesn't it feel like you're in a marathon? And I think maybe I can appreciate that after hearing your story. But I remember, because I wanted to have it be drug-free birth, and just the intense pain, and having, you know, Basil there going, no, can't have drug, but like, all these thoughts and all these, and I even had bets with people that I wasn't going to make it, so that actually was helpful, you know, like, okay, I've got to beat them, I've got to, you know, win this bet that I'm not going to do drugs, you know, like, and, but even at, like, a certain point, I was like, I don't even care. I want the drugs, I don't want drugs, but yeah, I did end up making it, but I had to have that help and support, and I don't know if I would have, so when you talked then about the other guy that didn't have that support, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, one thing I didn't say, but having the pacer there for you was unbelievable. I mean, at mile 87, which is around 4 o'clock in the morning, mile 87, I told all I wanted to do was lay down in the dirt and go to sleep. Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to lay down anywhere and just go to sleep. And, you know, he was able to, like, come on, let's just get moving, let's just walk a little bit, let's just get on the trail, and was able to, you know, to help me in that regard. And
Well, I think you get to that point, though, and you need to have somebody kind of tell you what to do. That's why I'm really impressed by, well, by what you did, of course, but then, like I said, that guy that did it alone, that's pretty, you know, to not, to not lay down.
I mean, I was totally blown away by that, and, I mean, after having that experience and the feeling that generosity, I came back and I volunteered to be somebody else's pacer at a race that's going to be coming up early next year. So I think it'd be cool to give back and be able to do that for somebody else.
Thank you for sharing the story.
Some questions come up for me. And I think there's some comparison between what you did or doing a marathon. The idea of 100 miles is just like, it's like some other galaxy or something to me. But, we do long sittings. So we're doing a one-day sitting on Sunday and a three-day sitting in a couple weeks here. Mm-hmm. And at some point, maybe we'll get to do seven-day sittings. And, you know, it's not for everyone. But, one question I had is what the value of that is, and I could ask the same question about Sesshin, and you sort of answered the question, but I just wanted to go a little further, the sense of calm, the sense of having experienced that intensity and then appreciating, afterwards, just, an ordinary traffic jam or something.
Yeah.
It's a little bit controversial thinking about it in terms of Zen. It's possible to get into Zen as a competitive kind of event, and how long can we sit and how still can we sit. And when I was younger, I kind of did that, and it's hard for me to say what the value of it is. And yet, you kind of expressed it, but I'm just wondering if you have some other, or anybody else, some thoughts about, and you mentioned Eric doing 30-day events in Vajradhatu. How do we stretch ourselves? What do we find out about ourselves when we're willing? We come here and we sit for 30 or 40 minutes regularly, and I feel like the regularity of that is very informative. And then there's these other events where we, like as we're going to this Sunday, sit for a longer period and something happens, and it's kind of hard to pin down what that is. And so, having experienced both Sesshin and this amazing running event, if you have any other responses to that.
Yeah, I think just sort of as similar to Sesshin, when you sort of step away from your daily life and your daily grind, and then you do something fairly intense and sort of arduous and I don't know, it sort of puts things in perspective. It sort of clarifies. There's a guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's some people that do multi-day and week long-distance trails. There's a guy who set the speed record for running the Pacific Crest Trail from Mexico to Canada. I think he did it in 64 days. David Horton is his name. And he had a video about it, and he sort of talked in there. He's just like, whatever problems you have in your life, whatever questions you have in your life, whatever issues you have in your life, when you do something like that, when you're done, it's like all figured out. It's like the clarity is just there somehow. And but while you're doing it, you're not really specifically analyzing those problems. I think it's just, I don't know, it's like some perspective is gained by it.
What do you know about the marathon runners in Japan? Mm-hmm. Do you know about them, Taigen?
There are, I'm not sure if you're referring to the monks on Mount Hiei, the Tendai monks I'm not sure how long their running is, but they run at night in the mountains barefoot. So, is that the one you're referring to?
Well, I'm not sure. I've heard about it, that it's an incredible, it's an incredible feat to just do this, and some of them die. And some of them make it and become enlightened.
So I read a book. I don't know if you've read the book.
John Stevens?
It's been many years, yeah. But I remember that it's a 7-year regimen of training, mm-hmm. and they begin by running sort of normal marathons, but like 5 times a week. And then by the end, they're running hundreds of miles per week, or kind of around the clock. And it's all part of a circuit around Mount Hiei where it involves running and chanting and going, visiting all the 100 different shrines. And make offerings and keep running. So it's like a mandala, mm-hmm. that they run, and then by the end, the last, it's like they run 7 days straight or something, and they don't eat, and mm-hmm. they have this big fire, and it's a pretty extraordinary thing.
There's also a race, the Transcendental Run. There's a 3,100 mile race in New York City, that's run around one block. So these guys run every day, all day, around one block for, I don't know how long it takes some of these guys, 60, 70 days maybe. But I think that's all completely about the meditation, trance, going beyond yourself, all that. I think that's the appeal for doing something like that. But even in the 100 milers, I think a lot of people are, the attraction to ultra runners and to people that do that is, you know, just to be able to really to push through what feels like your personal barriers or your personal limitations, and to push through that, and then to know that you can. I mean, I'll admit, if I would have quit, I shouldn't be so attached to the outcome. I should have just tried to put out my best effort. But I will admit that if I would have quit at mile 87, you know. Guy ran 87 miles, you know, most people can't do that, but I think I would have been pretty disappointed. So I was very happy to, through support of many people, to be able to finish it and to be able to do it.
I reminded so much of my first 7-day session many years ago, my first teacher in New York, and after the third night I had this idea that I had to get enlightened. There was no other, you know, so I sat up all night. And by lunch the next day, I was just dissolved. I just couldn't do it. And I went into Nakajima Sensei and said, I don't think I can do this, you know. And he said, I think I should just go home. And he said, well, it's okay, you can do that, but you might regret it later. So I ended up staying. And it was mostly just kind of to get through it. But anyway, it's... there's something that we get by putting out that, so you were talking about patience and effort and what we can learn from exerting ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that also applies kind of, you know, well, you do a lot, you do running many, you know, most days of the week. So anyway, there's the other side of just sustaining mm-hmm. a gentler.
Yeah. But I mean, I've heard of people who have done a marathon for the first time or a 50 miler for the first time, and then, you know, it has an impact in their life. They sort of feel like, I really didn't think I could do, and I did it, so now what else in my life do I don't think I can do, but now maybe I can do that, maybe I achieve whatever or pursue something. So I think that's, I don't know, it's a healthy in some regard.
So after marathons and after sittings, there's usually tea and cookies in one way or another. But if there's any other questions or comments for David, please, a couple more people, it's okay.
I'm wondering, how do you go into this thinking, how am I going to protect my feet so that I can maintain this?
Proper footwear is definitely something that I personally spent a lot of time investigating. I did road marathons, and then when I got into trail events, I sort of preferred trail stuff. I like kind of being in the woods, different scenery and whatnot. So I kind of went on a year or so process of trying different shoes and trying to figure out what worked.
How about the sand? I'm just thinking about the sand getting into your feet.
Yeah, I wasn't really prepared for that. I think that's where the blisters came from. So, I seem to be able to like the pain of the blisters or the pain in my knee. At the end, when I took off my shoes, my left ankle was swollen. And I didn't really twist it or anything. I think it was just the impact of so many hours. But I seem to be able to sort of tune that out, or sort of not to separate from that, or maybe never, maybe make friends with it. I seem to be able to handle that okay. That was the thing that really bothered me was just feeling nauseous. But I suspect that, you know, when I first started sitting, my legs fell asleep all the time, every time, for quite a while. And I experienced a lot of knee pain and a lot of that. So I suspect that enduring that type of thing in sesshins or longer sittings is why I could kind of persevere through that physical pain.
I kind of wish, I guess, with the going through labor again, that I, because I had never sat before. And I think that, and I've talked with other mothers who are at practice, and they said it was very helpful. I mean, it's still, you know, just like, it's pretty hardcore, but it's, I think I that would have been really beneficial. I mean, I still think about that, like, if I would ever do that again, I think it would be very helpful.
Might be a different experience.
I think so. I really do.